Boy, man, I had a rough night's sleep. Boy, whew. I got a letter from the IRS yesterday, and I just couldn't sleep. Man, I'm dying here. Somebody help me.
IRS problems affect more than just your finances. If you're ready to take back control of your life and you owe more than $10,000, you need to call the Tax Doctor. Their expert staff can immediately protect you from the IRS and state collectors and get you the best possible tax settlement guaranteed. The IRS has recently released new programs geared in helping struggling taxpayers, where you may qualify to settle your tax debt and wipe out up to 85% or more of what you currently owe. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call the Tax Doctor right now. See if you qualify to pay less. 800-917-8611. 800-917-8611. 800-917-8611. Again, 800-917-8611.
Smartphone to your Bluetooth with your earpiece on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solitaire. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson.
Nerd Up. Welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, along with
Eric Billingsley,
Tim Coker,
Tim Mattson,
and Isaac Wilson.
And
what?
And tell you what, the coolest thing about it, if you look at our logo, the little graphic that Tim Coker created for us, you'll see every one of those faces that you just heard their names. We're all here. It's a first.
The squad.
That's amazing.
And by the way, welcome back, Tim Mattson. I know you've had strenuous duty in the trenches.
Dudes, it's so good to be back.
So now you've got a great movie watching experience in your home. So we're probably still not going to hear from you. You're going to be stuck in the huge man cave you created.
Mm-hmm. Dudes, you have no idea what it's like in here. It's glorious. I'm really regretting I did not install a bathroom so I don't have to leave.
Just run some tubes.
Chamber pot.
Yeah, there you go.
Catheter, something. Two catheters, one for coffee in, one for coffee out.
Oh, there you go. Well, you know, actually, I gave blood today, and one of the things I was supposed to have done, but this guy was hogging up the machine, was where they pump out 2 pints of blood to get all the red blood cells and then pump it back in, pump the remainder back in. And that's what you need to get is one of those machines, but instead, one side coffee, one side, you know, just saying. You can get them from the Red Cross, I'm sure. Anyway, so let's talk nerdy stuff. It's been a while since we've been all together, but one of the things we need to hit off first and just get it out of the way, because Tim Coker finally saw Fantastic Four. And even though we talked bad about it, he still went and saw it. So, Tim, tell us what you think.
Yeah, well, I couldn't not go. I mean, you know, I'm such a Fantastic Four guy. I mean, I don't keep up with the comics as they print them now, but they were my first favorite superhero deal, and I'll probably always will be, especially Ben Grimm. And so, you know, I'm not going to not go see the movie. And I really at first thought, okay, well, maybe this is going to be okay, because I, you know, you have Reed and Ben as kids, and they're pretty good. I thought I liked the two of them, and you know, some of it was a little heavy-handed, but whatever. You know, they start like that. The bad decisions start almost immediately, because then it like jumps forward, I don't know, 10 years or whatever. So they're supposed to be, I guess, seniors in high school or something. Mm-hmm. And they both look 30, by the way.
Yeah.
But they're supposed to be seniors in high school, but they don't actually say they're seniors, but they appear to be competing in a high school science fair, right?
Right.
That's what they're doing with their big breakthrough of dimensional travel is a science fair.
Oh, geez.
But the thing is, like, okay, that's okay if you're making like a weird comedy or something, but the movie is so serious about everything.
Right.
And yeah, it's just like the tone is all wrong. Ben is never funny or charming. He's just sad.
Yeah.
Or angry. You know, Ben is funny and charming, you know, and it's Clobber in Time doesn't need to have a traumatic origin.
Yeah.
You know, it, you know, like, right? Right. Like, so I thought the movie was really a loss. Dr. Doom was terrible. I think worst on-screen realization of a supervillain ever, maybe.
Tim, do you think it's time for them to give up on Dr. Doom? I mean, they've tried it all the way back to that Roger Corman abortion, you know, every single time. Is it time to find them a new villain?
Well, okay, I have to say I haven't seen the Roger Corman version in 20 years, but what I'll say about the two versions of Dr. Doom that they've messed up in the movies is it's because they've completely failed to engage with anything to do with the character other than the most superficial visual resemblance. It's kind of like the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies where they're not actually looking at who. Haha, I found a way to get that in. But they're not interested at all in who these characters really are, what makes them tick, what makes them special. They just kind of make you look like them and act like them a little bit, and they give you catchphrases, and it's supposed to be okay.
Yeah.
And that's what they've done with Dr. Doom, is they've decided that the version from the comics is dumb, and they want to do something cooler. And I'm sorry, but untouchable head of a rogue state who wears high-tech armor – and is powered by an invincible blend of science and super sorcery.
Why
isn't that in the movie?
Anyway.
Well, when they mention that he's from Latveria at first, you're like, uh-oh, this is going to get good. Uh-huh. And then,
right. Mm. No.
I'd be willing to argue that Roger Corman is the one that did it closest.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, it's cheap and it's not smart, but at least it's not like it doesn't show real contempt for the audience the way this movie does, because it so clearly falls between two stools with this desire to take something that's completely lighthearted. Well, not completely lighthearted, but it's like Superman. It needs a light touch, you know?
Yeah.
And it should be fun and entertaining and adventure, and to make it this dour DC style. Everything's horrible. It's all, you know, it just made me sad. And reading up on it has been kind of fascinating. I don't know if you guys have read at all about the kind of debate over the changes made to the movie any of that.
Not yet.
Not in detail.
It's a fascinating story, and I can't wait until enough distance has passed where the story can kind of all be out and we can learn what happened. But it's really interesting to kind of see how this movie has changed as they shot it, because, you know, like Tim Blake Nelson, right? We all know who he is. He's been in a lot of movies. He's a well-known actor. And in this movie, he's playing this kind of bland rice cake of a man who, for some reason, is always chewing gum.
Yes.
And he's this kind of sweaty government stooge, right?
Yeah.
But why on earth is an actor like Tim Blake Nelson in this movie playing a sweaty government stooge who has a really graphic and unpleasant death, by the way?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, spoilers. But but it's because in the original version of
Tim,
the movie,
listen,
that
you can't spoil something no one's going to see.
It's already been spoiled. But he was supposed to be the guy who becomes the Mole Man.
Oh, really?
And he had a whole different name when they shot the movie. And if you'll notice, the only time anybody says his last name, it's a cutaway to another actor. Well, just like with Von Doom,
nice.
He was supposed to be Victor Domashov when they were shooting. Mm-hmm. And then they went back and did reshoots, you know, and I'm fine with them not having it be Victor Domashov. I'm just saying, but yeah, so they decided, you know, this guy who's going to have this crazy army of little mole warriors and giant crazy monsters from Subterranea. Yeah, no, he's just going to be like a government guy, you know,
and you
it's
know what?
Like that.
You know what? Looking at the, you know, he would be a great moment. He's got the look.
Well,
not putting him down in any way, but he could carry.
No, he's a weird looking dude.
Yeah, he's got that look.
And the poor guy, this is like a double case of cinema supervillain blue balls for him, because, you know, in the Incredible Hulk movie, the Louis Leterrier movie, he's supposed to turn into the leader and you see his head get dripped on. And again, I'm not like heartbroken that I didn't get a sequel to that movie, but you know, he was supposed to be the leader. Now he's supposed to be the Mole Man. And I think he's got to feel like Marvel's like the, or not Marvel, but superhero movies are the king of empty promises, you know?
Wow.
Maybe that's why he was chewing the gum all the time. You know, because you know, being the mole man, he had to sharpen up those teeth, and I don't know, but that bugged the crap out of me.
Well, yeah, because
there was a lot of hubbub over Josh Trank having a tweet out that said, yeah. "Oh, you'll never get to see my version of the actual movie," and then he later deleted that tweet, and people were saying, "Well, that cost the movie $10 million right there." And
no,
I severely disagree with that statement. The movie cost itself all the money.
No, this movie is terrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, it isn't all terrible, and there are things in it that I can enjoy. Like, I actually think that Michael B. Jordan was phenomenal as Johnny Storm. Chris Evans was too. They're both very, you know, different but really good interpretations. Even, you know, Kate Mara, I think is her name, playing Sue, she was good. Mm-hmm. You know, she didn't have
really
a lot to
good
do
actress, but I have not seen her in this.
Wait, can I complain about something else?
Yeah.
Okay. So I've complained before about why, for some reason, dumb people who make superhero movies feel the need to have the superhero and their arch villain have a shared origin.
Mm-hmm.
That really, I mean, and I'm not going to mention this, it's not that way in the comics. And, you know, that's not what I'm doing. It's just that it's trite and it's stupid. And they did it again in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so the device that's going to send everybody to Planet Zero, negative zone, Planet Zero has four little chambers in it, right?
Right.
And so who goes? It's the three of them.
The men.
The men with Doom. And then Sue, who's being all business, comes in and she's like, I got to get the boys back. And she gets zapped by, you know, some kind of energy wave. And you know, really.
So dumb.
That was my response in the theater, as a matter of fact, when she came running in and got zapped with that. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
And made me do that.
And it just gets back to the failure to engage with the source material. And that's what we see here in like giant capital letters as big as the Hollywood sign. Failure to engage with the source material. It should be on the poster.
Well, do you think part of the dour nature of this reboot is because so many people complained about the goofiness of the person?
Oh, yeah. But Reed Richards does a stretchy disco dance. Of course that people hated that. But it's, I don't know, you know? It's like saying, well, a punch in the junk's better than getting a knife in my throat. But
I don't know. Well, let me ask you, what's the actor's name that played Reed Richards? What's his name?
Miles Teller?
Yeah, okay. Well, see, I just recently saw a movie with him and
J.K.
Simmons called Whiplash.
Yeah.
You guys,
It was like, it won like two or three Oscars.
Oh, did it really? Okay.
J.K. Simmons won Best Supporting Actor.
Okay. Well, I just saw that the other night, and if I had not seen that movie, I would have given up on this actor, thinking that that crap movie just ruined his career. But I saw that, and I'm like, okay, never mind. He's a good actor.
Yeah. All four of them are actually fine actors, and they do a fine job with the material they're given. It's just that nobody's driving, you know?
Yeah, good point.
But especially Ben. You know, Ben is like, you know what Ben is? Ben is the Marvel Universe's best pal.
Yeah.
It's like everybody's best pal. He's the guy that they have bowling nights with. He's the guy they have poker night with. And he's the guy that'll come and smack, you know, the 500-foot monster in the head that's trying to ruin your wedding. You know, he's Ben Grimm.
Right. And then he'll have a cigar.
And in the movie, you know, Jamie Bell's fine. He plays the character he's given effectively. But the whole conception of the character is he's kind of this haunted guy. And oh, man, does everybody have to be haunted?
Ben Grimm was always I always compared him to that uncle you have that always grabs you and gives you the noogies, you know, says, hey, partner, you know, that's the way I always saw Ben Grimm. I have not seen that Ben Grimm in any movie. So
No.
Yeah. I don't know why. They just can't get it right.
It's like a fun uncle.
Yeah. Well, he did take care of the Richards kids, you know, so.
To be fair, there is a lot of melancholy to the character, too. That's an undercurrent.
Yeah.
And with pretty much any cinematic adaptation, it's the forefront.
Well, yeah, because they're not comfortable being fun. It's easier to just look sad. I don't know.
Yeah.
It makes me sad.
And
so good job.
This movie, there were so many potential moments where it's like, okay, they can start being good right now. This looks good. And then they just failed. Did you see that too?
Oh, absolutely. Hey, I'll give you an example. During the scene where they're watching the thing attack a military base, and they're watching it on like screens in a conference room, because the whole movie takes place in like darkly lit labs and conference rooms.
Yeah.
And it's always people. You remember Heroes, like season two, where they're like, oh, Hero, you should have been there. It was amazing. There were 500 ninjas, you know?
Yeah.
It's like that, where you hear people talking about stuff that I'd rather see, you know, but because it's Fox, it's really cheap. And I know that after they had done all the pre-production and pre-viz, Fox slashed the budget drastically, you know, just to cripple a little more, because that's what they do. And so there's a whole fight scene that they had done pre-viz. The whole thing was planned out of it was going to be right at the point where after they've been changed, and then it has a blackout, and it's like 1 year later. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what it was supposed to do was black out and then go to Ben being dropped like a bomb onto a Chechen rebel base and clearing it up, you know, doing a huge, big, giant action scene. And they filmed it. There's stuff in the trailers, you know, where you can see it. But interestingly, Josh Trank evidently really fought for it. And the studio would not allow it because it was too expensive. And then finally, when they realized, oh, wait, we've got a superhero movie and there's no action in it, they're like, oh, okay. So then they went ahead and shot it, but forbade Josh Trank from being involved, mm-hmm. and shot it all in like shaky cam found footage style,
right.
which didn't fit with the rest of the movie. So Josh Trank ends up cutting it anyway. This is not how you make a good movie, people. No. God.
But there's so many moments that it's like, it could have been. But
like they all get in the capsule and go back to Planet Zero at the end, right? You know what they did in the original version of the movie? There's footage of them on a green screen stage doing it, taking the Fantasticar. Wouldn't that have been better?
Oh, man. Well, they showed a glimpse of what could have been, maybe it's the plans for the Fantasticar on one of the things. I was like, oh, there it is. But they didn't.
They built it. They filmed on it. It could have been in the movie. And I can't quarterback this movie because I wasn't there. I didn't do it all, but it had to be better than what we saw.
Yeah.
Anyway, I didn't like the movie.
I guess not. So,
well, we'll probably see another version, like the Rogue cut of X-Men coming on home video, the Trank cut.
He kind of shat the bed on his way out of this.
Yeah, I think so too.
Well, they won't let him on the studio lot anymore, I don't think.
Probably not after that tweet, no. Well, they do have a Fantastic Four 2 scheduled.
And they're sticking to it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Are they really? Yeah. I wonder.
Yeah. Well, that's the current report, is they're saying, yeah, we're still doing it, but it's not going to be 2017. We're going to need to find another director and figure out where we take this.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, I don't know, guys. Just give it back. Yeah.
What do you think? Do you reboot it again?
No.
No, no, no.
Nobody wants to see another origin movie by the... I don't know. I would do
unless
what they're doing with Spider-Man.
Unless somehow,
just
through some miracle, it reverted back to Marvel's property. Then they'd have to do that over again. I know.
Yeah, I think Fox would rather make these direct to video than give the rights back to Marvel, honestly.
Absolutely.
Now,
yeah.
One other thing, Tim, Sue Storm and Johnny Storm, brother and sister, did you buy it?
Totally. The actors pulled it off, I thought. I thought, see, again.
Oh, was it an adoption?
Yeah, she was adopted.
Okay.
She has to be the kind of humorless scold, good student, and he's the cool guy that fixes cars. You know, it's kind of a classic.
Yeah. Well, what about
sexist treatment? But the two of them as actors, I thought they pulled it off.
Yeah, I thought that was they did it right. They explained it right, and then and it worked out great. But when they said her selection of music was Portishead, I'm like, huh.
I like
Portishead, but that was weird.
Yeah,
it was weird.
It was a reach.
Well, I wanted to bring this up, and it's related because talking about good actors doing bad dialogue or bad material, a good actor can elevate bad material and make it sound actually halfway decent. I've seen that happen, but those actors are few and far between. Now, I know none of you guys play this game, so this is just a side note, but it is worth bringing up. And it's on a lot of people's minds. There's a huge update to the game Destiny that's coming out in less than 30 days. It's massive. They're completely revamping the game, adding a lot of features. It sounds really cool. I'm psyched. I'm caught up in the hype machine myself. But one of the things that they're doing that is really, I mean, just kind of an evil thing to do is they are completely redoing all of Peter Dinklage's dialogue with what's his name? Nolan North.
Deadpool.
Who is a great voice actor, and he does some amazing work and some great games.
Yeah.
But Here's the thing. When I first played that game, I heard Peter Dinklage's first lines, and I was like, wow, this sounds really phoned in to me. And then I started thinking, I was like, well, maybe it's a choice. Because he's playing like a robotic guide type character. You know, the wacky sidekick robot. Not so much wacky, but he's your guide through the whole thing. But there's just, his delivery's lifeless. And it just kept occurring. Every time I'd hear his lines, I was like, why is he doing it that way? Anyway, I wasn't the only one who thought that, apparently, because they're completely deleting all of his lines with the update. And, I mean, it's still going to be the same play. Everything else is going to be the same, but they're having his all of his lines redubbed, which is, you know, this is Peter Dinklage, you know, Game of Thrones. This guy is, like, huge. I just thought that was really an interesting choice.
And you're talking, figuratively speaking, he's huge. Yeah, I heard a lot of flack about that video game, about his lines in that. And then when, after I saw the movie Pixels, I'm like, yeah, I wish he'd have phoned that one in too.
But it's weird though. I mean, I think he could have put forth more effort, and he should have. But like I said, only the dialogue's terrible. And you know,
I don't
only
know,
so much
Eric. I'm gonna give an opposing view to you. I think it was fine. I think it's the written word that is terrible.
Well, I won't argue with that.
the written story to Destiny is so boring, so very boring, that there's not much he could have done to make that listenable. I would be willing to bet that the person picking up Destiny with Nolan North is going to be just as bored to tears by that.
Well,
as...
I'm curious to hear it. I really am, to see what they consider to be an improvement.
Well, to be fair to Peter Dinklage, it's not only about, we got to get Dinklage out of there, we got to replace him. It's about add-on content and upcoming game content.
Right.
Peter Dinklage has been unavailable because he was filming Pixels.
Right.
And so they had to get this game, this extra content shipped. So they had to replace him with somebody else. Now, that's their story, and it's a convenient story, believe
right.
me. I am sure they're replacing him because of his poor performance. But honestly, there are other reasons as well.
Okay.
Well, I guess it goes along the same with the Fantastic Four. These all were great actors that just were given bad scripts. So bad material.
And plus, he is playing a small, round, robotic probe.
Yeah.
So I think his performance is perfectly serviceable. It's not memorable, but it's totally serviceable and not bad. I think people are coming down way too hard on that.
I just think maybe my expectations were really high when I heard, oh, Peter Dinklage is actually, you know, voicing the character in this game, and then, you know.
Absolutely, but he's playing a ball the size of a soccer ball that all it does is just float around near you. It doesn't emote. It doesn't do anything.
But that's the thing. If that was the choice they went with, and given him more, you know, standard, very robotic type, computer type lines, instead of, he makes little jokes and he's like, I don't even want to know what made that noise. And, you know, things that, you know, aren't something a computer would interject. It's signs of a you know, a sentient being, a sentient force. But it just seems like they were on the fence where they wanted to go with that, whether they wanted to go with, you know, just a robotic creature. And then, of course, there's the Exos, the race of robotic beings that are sentient. So I don't know. I it's a big mess, as you said. You can't really go from point A to point B with the lore like you can with World of Warcraft, which I think that this game is trying to emulate in a lot of ways, especially with the new content. It sounds like it's trying to be the shooter of World of Warcraft, essentially.
It would like to emulate their revenue stream anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now you say basically you've got this orb following you around that's kind of like your guide and protector.
Yeah.
Is it a protector as well or something like that?
No. You have to protect him.
I was going to say, Phantom X Comics got some lawsuits in hand if that's the case. So
it's your thing that floats around and unlocks doors for you.
Oh,
so he's a lame version of Claptrap.
Actually, he's the male version of Cortana is exactly what he is.
Let's go back to movies for a second. Isaac and I saw a couple movies this weekend. We haven't yet talked about them. Have either of you seen the new Vacation movie?
No, I heard it was terrible, though.
No.
I don't Okay, I'd have to differ only because it's okay. There's nothing ever going to compare to the original. Okay, ever. That's
right.
The original was the original, but this was a sequel and it wasn't a reboot. I was worried it was going to be a reboot. Basically, it's Rusty grown up and he's taking his family on the vacation because it's so funny. There's this one scene where basically every year they go to the same cabin in Michigan and Christina Applegate, his wife. They show these pictures. They're all standing in front of the cabin and it's like for the last 10 years they've gone to the same cabin. That's their summer vacation. And they show the pictures, and he zooms in on her face, and each picture, each year, she just gets sadder and sadder, and it's just a funny little thing. and it's like that's the funny point where they realize, or he realizes, okay, we got to do something different this year. Right. And so she wants to go to France, but instead he goes, we're going to Wally World. and there's a scene, I saw it in the trailer, and I thought it was just for the trailer, but it's actually in the movie, that he goes, we're going to go on the vacation like my dad took me on the vacation. And they kept saying the vacation. And he goes, and the little kid goes, I never heard about the original vacation. He goes, we're going to remake the vacation? He goes, no, it's not a remake. We're going to actually do our own vacation. It's like, it's really, you know, a meta film, if you will.
Fourth wall.
And almost fourth wall breaking, but not quite. But you realize it is actually, it's a sequel. And he even goes and visits Audrey and her husband, who's played by Chris Hemsworth, who is hilarious. I'll just put it this way. I don't want to give it away, but a prosthesis, Chris Hemsworth in underwear. That's all I got to say.
I've seen that scene. I don't know if it was like in the trailer. It was in the trailer.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, that scene is awesome. He really sells it too. He looks so happy.
Yes, he does. And Isaac and I are just cracking up. Let me tell you guys, it's very uncomfortable when you're sitting there with your 14-year-old son watching and at the same time cracking up, and you look over and Isaac's cracking up just as much as I am. So I'm like, okay, we're cool.
And you're laughing at a scene about a guy with his schlong out.
I didn't want to say that.
I'm a 14-year-old, I'll say it.
And it's, oh my God. And then at the very end, the end credits, they show the pictures, and like half the picture, and then they'll flash the director or whatever they're showing at the time, and they'll fade down to the lower half of the picture. And there's one of him on vacation, shirtless, and they scan down, and it's hanging out of his swim trunks. All right, but anyway, that's the one section. But I will say that it was a very nice sequel. I laughed my butt off. It was like almost nonstop. There were so many. It's if you saw Anchorman or Anchorman 2, even more. It's one of those types of. It's got that sophomoric humor, more so than the original Vacation. The original Vacation had some clever jokes. This one had a little more locker room humor, but it was just it kept me rolling. I had a fun time watching this. I mean, they go visit Audrey. Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo are in this one. What I'm trying to think of the whitewater rafting guy, the actor that played him. He's got a real high-pitched voice. I think he's in Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I can't think of his name. He's got a real high-pitched voice in the movie. Anyway, he's going to take them whitewater rafting, and he's, like, so happy about everything. And at the same time, he's making these jokes. He goes, well, you know, we go on this trip now. Well, 50% of us are going to live through it. And then he looks. He goes, oh, I'm just joking. Look at his face. He thought I was kidding, or he thought I was serious. And, you know, he does these little jokes like this constantly, and it, like, gets real annoying. And then they're getting ready to go whitewater rafting. He gets a phone call from him. He says, oh, yeah. He goes, I'm getting ready to get married next weekend, so going to have to do what I can with the ball and chain without the ball and chain this week. And so anyway, so then he gets a call, and he goes, honey, what do you mean? No, you're everything to me. You're my life. You're everything. And he goes, you can't break up with me. And then he throws the phone in the river. So now they go whitewater rafting, and throughout the whole scene of whitewater rafting, the song by Nilsson, Without You, you know, I can't live, living is without you, is going on. And he sabotages the whitewater rafting trip. And it's just one of the funniest segments. I was cracking up at every little thing they were doing. And they do it in like they just like show segments of their faces over each hill and bump. And the way they did that, it just, I wish I would have actually not laughed, because there were so many little scenes in there that were hilarious. But I don't know. It's, again, nothing compares to the original, but it's full of humor, and I laughed. And
you know, I was kind of willing to go in on this. I really was, because I love the original Vacation films.
Me too.
Mm-hmm.
They were a lot of fun, but if I can point to the exact moment where I was like, yeah, this is probably not for me. It was the trailer where they're in the basically raw sewage.
Yeah.
Human feces on their faces. I'm like, no, this movie is not for me.
Oh, but building up to that scene, oh my gosh.
I know. And I just have to say it. I think if the original Vacation movies had come out now, I don't think I would like them.
Mm-mm. Well, that scene was, oh my gosh. There's so many different, and it's just nonstop. They go all across the country like before and have all these misadventures. At least they don't have an ant that dies, or they don't tie a dog to the trunk, to the bumper of the car. So
yeah.
But they got this this
vehicle. I just think
vehicle.
I kind of feel like vacation movies, you have to see them at a certain age to really have them take. I think, you know, if I saw them now as you know, a 40-something-year-old man, I don't know that I would find them as funny.
I don't know. They and that's the thing with those movies. See, here's another thing. This one was not National Lampoon's Vacation, but they still, you know, paid homage to all the vacation films.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if they had to have the National Lampoon branding on it. But is National Lampoon around anymore?
The magazine? I've not seen it in a very long time. They have a website.
That's probably it. It's probably like Cracked, and it's just an online thing.
Yeah,
I would imagine.
Huh. I love Cracked.
Yeah, me too. They got some fun stories.
I've lost more hours of my life to that website.
I'm just wondering if the branding was what. But no, it is definitely the locker room humor. It's a guy's film. I don't see too many women saying, yeah, I'll go see that. I don't know.
You don't say.
Imagine.
All right, I got to give you one more line in this, and this is another one that was very uncomfortable watching with my 14-year-old son. Rusty's son, Ed Helms' son, he's out by the pool, and anyway, basically he... I don't want to give it away, but he chases off the girl that the son's hitting on. And so Ed Helms says, well, I know what you're doing, partner. Just, you know, make sure you wear a condom, blah, blah. He goes, Dad, I don't need that. He goes, well, we've never had the talk. He goes, I don't need... He goes, well, just let you know, if there's ever a question you need answered, you know, ask me. And so he goes, well, yeah, actually there is. I heard the guys talking. What's a rim job?
Oh, okay.
And so Ed Helms goes, And you can tell he doesn't have a clue. And he goes, oh, I think that's when you just kiss with like the edge of your lips because you're just using the rim of your mouth. And so then later on, they're sitting by the hot tub. And he goes, well, I'm going to go inside. He goes, good talk, son. And this other guy's walking out. And he goes, well, you wouldn't mind if your dad gave you a good night rim job, would you? And so the other guy turns around and walks away. So, again, see, that's the type of humor it is. Funny, but very, you know, it's locker room humor.
I'm very lowbrow.
Yeah, yes.
So, I can enjoy it.
I think Shakespeare wrote that rim job joke first. It was in As You Like It.
I'm going to reread that play now. Well, he did have the cannabis in his pipes, so we know that much. All right, and now, okay, let me move to another movie, a serious movie. Have any of you guys seen The Gift?
No, but I've read a lot of very good things about it.
Never heard of it.
I've never heard of it.
Just came out in the theaters this week.
Oh.
Jason Bateman, he plays the lead, and basically what it is, he moves back to his hometown when he's shopping for, they just bought a new house, they're shopping for furniture for the house, and this guy, creepy stalker guy, hanging out outside is just staring at him. Anyway, the creepy stalker guy comes in, and he says, we went to school together. He goes, I don't remember you. And then they finally introduce, he says his name, Gordon. He goes, oh, Gordo, yeah, I remember you now. And so then, you know, they invite him over for dinner, and each time he gives them a gift. And the gifts just kept getting a little creepier and stalkerish. But I'm not giving anything away. I'm not going to talk about anything in this movie at all like I did Vacation. But I will say this. In the middle of the movie, it does a complete 180, goes in a completely opposite creepy direction, even more creepy. And you're like, what? Oh my God, how could, you know, just that's how your effect, you know, how could someone do that? Then at the end of the movie, it does another 180. And it gets even creepier, and you're like, oh, I can't believe that just happened. And you walk out of there just like, oh. And it's not creepy, gross creepy, but creepy, like totally psychological thriller creepy. It's just like, it's a great movie. I loved it. Only because the twists that just made that. I mean, again, I thought I knew where this was going, completely opposite direction, and then turn. Now that I've told you that, though, that's probably going to ruin it for you because you're going to know to expect that.
I don't think it will. I watched the trailer and it just didn't. I don't know. It just didn't strike me as something I was really going to be into.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Me either. I had no desire to go see it. Guess who made me go see it?
It's got 93% on the Rotten Tomatoes.
Is that right?
Interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty doggone high.
Well, Isaac saw the trailer and said it looked like a great horror film, because really it kind of looked like a horror film.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was.
I thought it was too, yeah.
I didn't see the trailer. I read it on IMDb, which is what made me think it was a horror film, because my friend was the one that wanted to go see it.
Okay, yeah,
he
took him.
He dragged me to see it.
Yeah, and so I'm like, I really don't want to see this. I said, do we have to? I was like, can't we go see Vacation instead? And I'll tell you what. I walked out of that theater, you know, saying, oh, wow, I'm glad I saw that. That's really good.
Well, you may have to give it a shot.
Yeah, and Jason Bateman, he's got, like, the whole quality of that character I mean, the movie rests on the way that he portrays it. You know, if he didn't do it right, that movie would have been a bust. But he just carried that movie and just made it creepier and creepier, which surprised me from Jason Bateman. I like his humor, you know, his comedy roles, but this is like totally serious and totally different from what I've seen him in. But definitely worth the watch.
Yeah, that's an actor that doesn't really have a huge range as a performer. He's very approachable as, that's not what I want to say. I can't think of what I want to say. He's very likable as an actor, but he just doesn't really show a lot of range.
Yeah, and this one right here, you're going to see some other end of the spectrum from him. It really, to me, anyway, like I said, it turns around halfway through, and then at the end it turns around, and there's just so many twists throughout that just...
And if
it weren't for him carrying the role like he did, it would not have worked.
You'd think it was written by M. Night Shyamalan or Shyamalan.
Yeah.
Well, the director is from Australia. I've heard good things about him. He's also in the movie. His name is Joel Edgerton, and his previous feature was Animal Kingdom, which I've heard really good things about, and it's got a 96 Rotten Tomato score.
Ah,
so I need to check this guy out.
Joel, do you know what role he played in the movie?
Yeah, it was Gordo.
Oh, my God. Wow. Okay, because that's another character that if it was played wrong, it would have also been ruined the movie too.
Yeah.
So the director is the antagonist of the film?
For a little while.
Can't spoil anything.
Interesting.
You really can't. You can't say it. It's like what is it? Thor: The Dark World. All the Loki scenes. You can't really say anything without spoiling it.
Right.
Yeah. It's amazing that. I mean, again, I had no desire to see it. Isaac's friend wanted to go see it and drug us both, and we ended up enjoying the crap out of it. But yeah,
sounds like my kind of film.
I think Eric, you would definitely like it. Tim Mattson, I would love to hear what you think about it. And Tim Coker, I think you'd like it too.
All right.
So I think you'd all like it, but I definitely want to. I would like to hear your response on it.
Interesting. Okay.
It was worth seeing. So that was my two movie excursions this weekend. I don't know what I'm going to see this weekend. If there's anything, there's no premiere, no good movies coming out.
Hey, you want to go see Fantastic Four again?
And again.
I'll tell you what I watched on the big screen this weekend was A Hard Day's Night, and it was glorious.
Oh, sweet.
That's always a good time.
It was fantastic. They are so charming. I did come to
that is the Fantastic Four right there.
That really is the original Fantastic Four, yes.
No kidding.
I have to say, after
especially
watching
when John does the stretchy dance at the disco.
Yeah, I've seen this film like I don't know four or five times, and watching it this time, I kind of came away with a I don't know a kind of a sobering notion of it. I think if I had known John Lennon personally, I would have found him to be a bit of an ass.
Oh, no question.
I don't think I would like him in the slightest.
I might say that about all four of them, honestly. After just as much as I've read about him and everything, I don't know that they're people that I would want to know.
Ironically, I think Ringo is the most likable out of all of them. Out of all the things I've seen him, you know, him just him being him, I think he's the most approachable and likable person out of all of them.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I'd agree with that. I mean, George is so introspective and just kind of mopish at times. And, John seems really aloof, and Paul's doesn't really seem that approachable either in that movie.
Well, yeah, Paul's very wooden in that film, but John is just, he's working so hard to be charming and funny that it comes off as just kind of desperately needy.
Yeah, well, he's definitely aware that he's the oldest, he's the leader, it's his show, you know, and I think on some level you see him working to kind of keep that up, you know?
Yeah.
So what spurred you to watch that? Something to watch?
We just had a couple friends over, and we were going through everything and trying to decide what to watch. While we were deciding, the first thing we watched was just a survey of opening scenes. We watched the opening scene to Touch of Evil and The Searchers and Boogie Nights.
Oh,
what
scene.
Else?
That opening sequence is so nice. Awesome.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We just put on different opening sequences and talked about them and just really kind of reveled in you guys have no idea how great it is to have a screen this big to watch any movie you want to on, because it instantly transforms your viewing experience to a cinematic experience. It's so it's such a delight to watch these films on this screen.
You know, guys. Tim, I said I gave blood earlier. You just just poured lemon juice in that vein. I just want you to know that hurts.
I would love to have you guys come down, and
I can't wait.
We could do a group podcast from the Mattson Cinema, because I think it would be fantastic.
Well, all right, let's jump to something a little more serious and more mature, mainly because, Tim Mattson, I want your opinion on, see if you've seen any of these movies. We talked about it before. The Eagle Theater, they're doing an Indie Fest, and they're basically thumbing their noses at the big production houses.
The man.
Yeah, the man. And they were told that indie films would never sell in a small town like this. So they said, well, we'll do Indie Fest. We'll show five of them, and we'll prove you wrong. And that's what they're doing. So they got five movies, and I want to see if you've seen any of these. We've already talked about them, so we really don't have to go into detail unless you've seen one and you can give us some insight about it.
Sure.
But they're showing them, in fact, starts Friday. Wow. Starts Friday and goes through September. 4 weeks, five movies. Let's see, in Eagle Theater. All right, his first one is The Water Diviner. Russell Crowe, he directs it, and he also stars
it. I'm aware of it, but I don't know anything about it.
Okay. Basically, he's going back to Turkey to get his three missing sons after a war. All right, so then we'll go Me and Earl and the Dying Girl.
That was actually playing here, too. I have not seen it.
That's the one Isaac... He says he hates when it happens because basically a girl's dying and the guy and the mother says, why don't you go hang out with her? She's dying. And Isaac goes, I hate when my parents do that. So, okay. Yeah, that one, it actually looks pretty cool. I mean, they all look cool. I mean, don't get me wrong. They all look really cool.
I hate when they do that because it always just kills the mood.
Whoa.
Anyway, so Alfonso Gomez Rejon is the director for that one. And then they're also showing Far From the Maddening Crowd, directed by Thomas Vinterberg.
Far From the Madding Crowd.
I'm sorry, Madding Crowd. Yeah, I misread that. Yeah, sorry. Hey, see, you knew it.
It's also not about video games, about football.
Far From the Madden Crowd.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm a funny kid.
Well, this is about...
Relatable.
Well, as soon as they said the name Bathsheba Everdeen, then I knew it wasn't about football. So, Madding Crowd. Far From the Madding Crowd. Anyway, that's one... another one that they're showing. They're also, now this is the one that's got me curious. I really want to see it, mainly because of the two actors in it, Zoe Saldana and Mark Ruffalo. Infinitely Polar Bear, and a director.
Yeah, I don't know actors.
Yeah, directed by Maya Forbes, and Cameron, who's played by Ruffalo. He's a man who suffers from bipolar disorder. He's forced to leave his family and move into a halfway house after a breakdown. He then attempts to rebuild a relationship with his two daughters and win back the trust of his wife, Maggie, played by Zoe Saldana. So two green people. So I don't know. It looks like that one, just because of the actresses, or I mean the actor and actress, I guess, has got me intrigued. And finally, the fifth one here is called Dope by Rick, and I'll never get his name right, Famuyiwa.
Sure.
So, any of those ring a bell?
Man, I've heard of most of those, but I have not seen any of them.
Oh.
But at the same time, I applaud their independent spirit, but I don't believe I would consider any of these independent films, because these are all major nationwide releases.
Mm-hmm.
So you
really want to go deep indie.
Well, I mean, for something to really be championing independent film, these were all, I believe, were studio released, or at least had a studio release of some sort.
They were limited releases, I know that for a fact.
Okay, all right. But no, seriously, I think they are definitely taking a risk because...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think any of these are going to be major players in the Midwest in any way. But
yeah.
I think it's great that a theater is willing to take a risk and show some of these films because, man, it sucks to be in the Midwest and just not have access to some things.
Yeah, exactly. Not especially the arts films. You know, they're the ones that are hardest to get here. And here's the thing: their goal was to sell 200 passes, and they had these passes as like $30, and you'd go see all five movies. And
that's a good deal.
Yeah, I thought it was a great deal. I mean, any theater.
I would totally do that.
Yeah, and so their goal was to sell 200 passes. When I went and saw Vacation Sunday night, they had sold, like, I think they said 180. And that's a week before. So it's like, okay, there. Take that, studios. Tell us what we can distribute or what we can show. So
I think it's great. I think more... more places should take risks like this and show things that they may not normally show and really champion film, because, man, there's only so much that a major Hollywood blockbuster is going to do for you. It's diminishing returns.
Right.
Yeah. Over time, you know. But yeah, to really champion good films, I think it's a great cause. I fully support that.
Yeah. Well, I kind of knew you would. I was hoping that you'd say, "Oh, I've seen all those. Those are all awesome."
It's been a difficult summer for me. We've been very busy with a lot of stuff, so I have not gotten out. And to be honest, now that I've had this experience of having this little theater on the back of my house, I've kind of lost the desire to go out to the movie theater.
Well, yeah.
I don't blame you a bit.
I mean, what? You got to wait a maximum of 3 months before something comes on video?
Yeah.
Most things come out day and date nowadays, especially indie films.
Well, and yeah, I was going to say, there's a lot of indie films you can find on demand at the same time that they're theatrically released.
Yep.
And that's, to me, that's a perfect world right there. If I don't have to go to the theater to watch this new film, man, that's fantastic.
You know, that's right, because I saw a few trailers for some indie films recently at and one of the things it said was available or opening this weekend on demand and at limited theaters. It was like same opening weekend that they had at the theaters.
Yeah,
on demand. Yeah, right. That would be a great deal.
That's becoming much more common because they're understanding that on demand is kind of losing that stigma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like, you know, direct to DVD has that whiff of, oh, this wouldn't succeed in theaters. Streaming is kind of losing that smell, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's very few, you know, there's very few video stores to rent from now.
Yeah, there's like none.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We got one in town.
I've got one that I go to. It's the only place that I can, you know, rent Blu-rays except from Netflix's limited selection.
We have one place in Greensboro, one. In a city this size.
Remember when they were on every corner?
You guys were talking about, you mentioned Zoe Saldana. I think it's interesting. I don't know if you heard, but she recently got married and her husband took her last name. And it was like this huge deal in the, you know, on the internet, you know, oh, he took her name. Is there anyone in this conversation who would not give up their last name to be Mr. Saldana?
I know, right?
Oh, gee, he gave up his last name. Oh,
I'd give him a last name for Mark Ruffalo. I mean, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I gotta say this, though. Like you said, you applaud them for making this attempt, and apparently it's going to be successful for them because they can still sell tickets days of shows. But
absolutely.
But the Gubelmans that run the Eagle Theater here, they're very art-oriented. In fact, Susan Gubelman, the wife of I don't know. I guess they own it together. I'm not sure exactly how that works. But she's active in a local community theater, and so I mean they're definitely arts people. Even though he's getting his PhD in history, they're still arts people. That's one thing that whenever they announced this, I'm like, cool. And he asked me which ones I was going to go see, and I was like, well, I'm not a huge indie film fan, but when I see him, it's usually by accident. I think I'm going to have 5 accidents coming up in the next 4 weeks. So,
man, you're getting really old if that happens.
Oh, he was quick with that one.
Depends, humor.
What are you going to wear to the movies? It depends.
Seriously, I mean, independent film is where you'll see things that you're not expecting to see. You'll mm-hmm. see stories you don't normally get. And the Hollywood system, they turn out a reliable product. Mm-hmm. But it's a bit like a chicken nugget. It's tasty at first and looks like chicken, but upon closer inspection,
it's got nothing to do with chicken.
It's not really chicken. So.
It's actually pretty unidentifiable.
It really kind of is. And after you've eaten enough of them, they kind of seem very, very similar. So,
well, I mean, I'm a huge horror fan, right? And I'm sorry, but it's been, I can't even tell you the last time that Hollywood made a good, I guess Conjuring would probably be the last time, but before that, I can't even think of one. It's very rare that Hollywood creates a good horror film, but the really good horror films, and a lot of times, are going direct to video because they're made by small independent filmmakers, and I hear about them or read about them online, and it's like, oh, wow, that sounds really interesting. Why have I never heard of that before?
Yeah.
And I'll seek it out and watch it, and it's like, wow, that was really good. Yeah, I've seen, have you heard of a film called The House of the Devil?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's done now 2 or 3 other films And I haven't seen the most recent one, but I've got it. It's basically a Jim Jones type situation in, you know, this remote area, and this documentary crew shows up. It's a found footage film. Yes, I know those are really old, but this documentary crew shows up to film, and of course everything goes haywire and lots of people are, you know, killed in horrible ways. It's produced by Eli Roth, so you can imagine.
Oh,
but,
gosh, yeah.
But the guy, I can't remember the guy's name, but he's made all of these horror films that are really kind of old school feeling and just, you know, great movies. You just don't hear about them because they don't get theatrical releases, at least not around here. So for horror fans, indie films are where it's at.
Maybe I can get, maybe if they're successful with this, I can get them to do some indie horror films. That'd be cool. Halloween's coming up.
That would be great. I guarantee you that is a much safer bet than this lineup of films. This lineup of film look pretty good, but man, a lineup of independent horror films in October,
you
would not have to worry about your tickets then.
Well, hopefully, well, like I said, they were close to the meeting what their goal was, and it's a huge diversity of film subjects. There's a couple period pieces, there's some modern ones. One takes place, looks like, in the 80s. Yeah, and I think you're right. I'll see what I can talk him into. Although he rarely listens to my suggestions.
Yeah, but I mean, if one of my dream jobs would be to program like an old, beautiful old theater like the one you're talking about. Totally what I would do on Halloween night or Halloween weekend, at least, is have like a triple feature, at least, of great independent horror films. And you have encourage everyone to dress up into costumes. You have like maybe a costume contest between movies, and you just make like a huge event of it. I guarantee you would be turning people away at the door, especially in a small town where there's not that much to do. People would look for things like that, you know?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. Well, you know what, guys? I think we should use that as a closing note. And until the next time, our time has passed us again. Let's get ready for another podcast. Oh, wait, we'll just wait a week for that. Anyway, so we'll close out this one. I'll talk to people about getting the horror, independent horror film. We'll see what happens there. Like I said, he rarely listens to me. I'll go see some more movies. But in the meantime, let's go ahead and close out this podcast. Don't forget, folks, you can support the podcast billions of ways. You know, if you're going to shop on Amazon, shop through our website. Go through nerduppodcast.blogspot.com. Click on the banner. It doesn't cost you any extra. It just gives us a little. And then also don't forget those wonderful T-shirts with those beautiful creation by Tim Coker. And you can get those on T-shirt, coffee mug, backpack, messenger bag. Let's see. I'm trying to think. Those are the ones that we've all bought. I had to get a coffee mug after I saw yours, Tim.
That coffee mug is awesome.
It is. Yeah. And it's the right size.
Buy these things and hold on to them, because in a few years it will be like a Picasso, I'm telling you.
Or something.
The value will skyrocket. I mean, forget about those commemorative plates. Those things are BS. This is where you want to invest.
This is where the Beanie Baby money is.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. So, yeah, support the podcast in the process and build up your collection. Also, don't forget, you can reach us all on Twitter at Sether. I'm Gil Wilson. You can reach me at Gil Wilson.
I'm Eric Billingsley. You can reach me at Eric Bill.
I'm Tim Coker. You can reach me at Tim K Has to Say.
And I'm Tim Mattson. You can reach me at Tim Gone Mad.
And I'm Isaac Wilson. You can reach me at EvilBacon88.
That's it for the podcast. As we say every week, stay nerdy.
Grandma, can you come out and play?
Sure, Ellie. Oh, my. You might want to come here and help Grandma.
What's the matter, Grandma? Can't you stand?
Oh, sorry, honey. It's my knees. They don't work the way they used to.
Does this ever happen to you? Are you on Medicare? You may qualify for a pain-relieving knee brace at little or no cost to you. Call the Health Hotline to see if you qualify. Our friendly agents are standing by 24/7 to help you. We also have braces for your shoulder, ankle, or back pain. And if you're covered by Medicare, you may qualify for free delivery.
Grandma, slow down. I can't keep up.
Maybe you can use a knee brace too, Ellie. Catch me if you can, kiddo.
Call now to get your pain-relieving knee brace.
800-301-2963. 800-301-2963. 800-301-2963. That's 800-301-2963.